Welcome back to another episode of the Startup Therapy Podcast. This is Ryan Rutan, joined as always by Will Schroeder, my friend, the founder and CEO of startups.com. Will, when we think entry-level talent, I mean entry-level talent, the earliest people we're going to hire at a startup company for the lowest level of the jobs, where do U.S. college grads rank on the list right now?
They used to be number one and there was no number two. And I've got to be honest, they are a very distant number four now. U.S. college grads as startup entry level going into a startup are my fourth draft pick. And there's three other draft picks ahead of them now. And that's what we're going
to
talk about.
What's the, give me a timeline on this. Like, what's the evolution been like to get to this? Like, it clearly didn't happen overnight. So what, walk me through it.
I think we're at a fascinating time because I think a whole bunch of things have all happened at the same time. Yeah. All beneficial to startups, by the way, maybe less so to U.S. college grads. And by the way, as a disclaimer, we're not trying to create a commentary here on college or U.S. workers or anything else like that. We're just telling you how the world has changed. That's all, right? So that's all this is about. I posted this on social like a week ago or so, and some people went crazy. They're like, how dare you talk about hiring anybody but U.S. college grads? I'm like, dude, slow down. Like, that's I say we're not hiring them. I'm saying they're not our first choice like they used to be, or only choice for that matter. So a couple things have happened, like major, major sea changes, right? The one we talk about a lot and the one that certainly is ranked number one, if college grads, U.S. college grads are ranked number four, is AI.
Yep.
Right now, AI isn't entirely ready for prime time.
No.
But the reason it's ranked number one is because it's fast, it's repeatable, it's infinitely scalable, and it costs next to nothing.
Yeah.
If I can do a task with AI and not need a human, why the hell am I going to hire a human to do it?
I think of AI at this point, it's a bit like, I used to run the internship program that we did every year at startups when I was still in Columbus. Yep. And to me, AI replaces some of that function, right? In terms of like how I think about it, how I'm going to use it, right? I'm not going to trust it to do something super high level. Like you said,
not yet.
It's not ready for prime time, right? It's not ready for prime time yet. And I think of the college intern in the same way. They weren't ready for prime time, right? They were ready to do some stuff. They were there to learn. They were there to be trained. They were there to help validate things where we could just throw extra resource that was relatively low cost and low friction, right? And that's exactly where AI is into the picture. When I've got something that's like, let's see if this works at any level. I'm not going to go and hire somebody for that. Number one, I think it's unfair to the person to be hiring. Right? I'm going to hire you and be like, hey, let's try this. I'm going to throw you at the wall like spaghetti and see if you stick, right? That's a horrible way to be hired, right? So a lot of this is just validation that we even need someone in the role at the AI level for me.
The equivalent right now, if you had a role that could be done with AI and you're hiring a human for it, right? Again, I'm not trying to get into this whole AI versus humans thing. That's not my point. We're startups. We're broke. We don't have a lot of choices, right? Like, so if we need to get stuff done, we're going to look for the most economical answer. Now, whether or not major Fortune 500 company does that, totally different discussion.
Yeah.
We're not talking about what they
we
do.
We are not.
Right? We're talking about a founder that has next to no money and needs to get shit done. That's it.
Yep. If we want to be able to hire people in the future, hiring AI today is a great way of getting them, right?
Yeah. Look, here's what I'm saying. If you have a task that AI could do, let's say it's writing all the product descriptions for all the items on your Shopify site, right? And you can hire a college kid to do it, right? And pay him like $60,000, $70,000 to do it. Or you can have ChatGPT do it faster, better for $20. There's no startup in the world that's not going to look at that and go, well, $20, right? Like it's now a $20 activity, right? So why wouldn't you pay $20 for it? Okay, we've got that change. And I would say like AI is just in the forefront. And we'll dig into each of these more. But the second major change to your question is the fact that what I'm going to call global talent, which is such a funny U.S. euphemism, right? Like the rest of the world doesn't look at themselves as not U.S. talent.
Yeah.
So I'll just call it what it is, right? But particularly in the U.S., where we tend to pay the highest wages, we now have really good access to global talent, right? Yeah. Whereas before, like I'm going to use a platform like Upwork, Fiverr would be in there. There's others like it. It used to be you'd go on there as a last resort. Right. It was like, oh, shit, we couldn't find anybody or we have no money. So I guess we'll just go here and get whatever the hell we get. Right. Yep. But the rest of the world kind of caught up a little bit. And I don't think a lot of startups get it. And I know this because I was in a conversation earlier this week in one of my in-person founder groups with a bunch of CEOs, founders. I brought this up and a bunch of them leaned in. They were like, wait, hold on. You can get what for what?
Yeah.
And I was like, dude, in Brazil, like 10-year seasoned software engineers make $5,000 a month. Not $5,000 a day like they get paid here. I'm kidding, but like,
right.
And those are legit people, right? And those are engineers, which are the most sought after, the most expensive, all that good stuff. Ryan, you might want to comment on kind of how disparate, you know, some of our organization has become.
Oh, it's massive. I mean, and this is nothing new for us either, right? Like, in fact, like just to put a stamp on it, we have an employee from Upwork, designer from the Philippines, living now, I think, back in France, maybe Spain, I forget. He's somewhere between the two, 13 years ago. So this is something we've been doing for a long time. We have people from kind of every corner of the globe. We've got people from Asia, people from North Africa. We've got people in Europe. We've got people in Central and South America, North America. And I think that's the other interesting thing, right? It isn't just about global talent, right? A platform like that is just about talent. Talent that you can compare on a relative basis with a lot of feedback now, right? Like, in as much as we've been doing this for 12 or 13 years on that platform, so have a lot of other people. And so there are folks who their entire resume is going to be a platform like that.
Yep.
And I don't want to get too far off on this tangent, but there's also the fact that, like, in a lot of cases, these are done on a fractional basis, and that's how those folks prefer to work. So not only are you getting really, really qualified talent at a very reasonable cost, you can sometimes the cost, the reason it's reasonable is that you're not hiring an FTE.
Right.
You can't go to a college graduate and be like, yeah, we'd love to buy, you know, like 5 hours a week from you. They're like, but student loans and I need a job.
And they do. Right?
Whereas
right?
Yeah. And they do. And there are jobs out there for them. Right. But an early stage startup trying to make its first couple hires is probably not the one. And I think, again, to this point, so this is, again, where like AI and fractional work or remote work, global talent fit really well is when we're in that really painful period where, like, maybe we've made the first hire in a particular role. Maybe we've got our person who's leading marketing, but now we've grown just enough where we don't really have enough money to hire another full person, but we've got more work that needs to be done.
You bet.
We're burning out the person we've got in the role, and that's not going to end well, but we can't afford to really expand the team fully. We need some way to make what we're doing more efficient to get us through that interstitial period until there's no, it's kind of like if you're building factories. I don't know who the hell builds factories anymore, but when you hit 100% capacity on your machine, you need another machine to produce your next 1 out of 1,000 widgets, but you're only going to sell 10 more widgets. You got to pay for the whole damn machine, right? Not a good position to be in. And this is where most early stage startups are from a growth perspective. They don't need another full FTE, but they do need more help. And I think that these two first solutions that we're talking about in particular are incredible for them.
The third thing that's changed, and again, all these are just really, like, whether you believe in hiring these people or not, it doesn't matter. These trends that exist with or without you, right? The third one that I'm calling kind of euphemistically what I call young and hungry. And what I mean by that, and maybe it's not the best descriptor, but this is the third rank in my stack rank. What I mean by young and hungry is you can now just get experience. It used to be like you kind of had to go and get the degree so that you could get a job, so that you could get experience, right? That was kind of the pecking order. But that's bullshit now. If you're graduating college and you don't have any real world experience, you didn't try. It's that simple, right? Because now what I look for, I don't care whether somebody has a degree or not. Like, it actually doesn't even occur to me. It doesn't even register. What I'm looking for is, what have you done? Oh, cool. You got a great GPA. Did you ship any code when you did that? Did you take a product to market when you did that? And then it's who cares, right? And a lot of times opening up another university for you to go to, all you did as a student means nothing to me. But now, and this is what really changed, there are so many ways to be able to get that experience without the degree or before the degree. Yep. I'm going to say without and before. That's a big deal for a lot of people who maybe couldn't have gotten the experience or the opportunity through a university, by the way, myself included, having never graduated, but they're really good at what they do. You know, our CTO was shipping websites when he was 16, right? Like, it's amazing. Like, by the time he came to us, and we did get him out of college, right? He was still in college. He hadn't graduated. By the time he came to us, he had almost 10 years of experience of shipping code.
And couldn't grow a beard yet, right?
Grow one now. Not knock that. Anyway, so we now have this massive pool of resources to hire from as startups. And sadly, you know, however you look at it, because I think there was, you know, this golden idea of the U.S. college grad. The U.S. college grad is number four. By the time I, quote, have to hire a U.S. college grad, and we hire tons of college grads, so again, let's just be clear, right? It's because I've already exhausted all of those other options at entry-level work. When you get into senior managers and stuff, it's a whole other discussion. Like, that's all about resume and things like that. But holy cow, things have changed. And they've changed significantly in like the last 5 years. It's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, realistically, I mean, like AI has been around for a long time, right? And we've been using versions of it for a long time. But realistically, the discussion around it actually taking on entry-level roles, it's 12, 18, maybe 24 months old,
right?
And not more. Right. So this is all very new. Yeah, there's something else that I do want to, and this isn't just justification after the fact, but I do want to talk a little bit about the fit of a college grad in a startup. And again, we're talking about startups. I'm not talking about going to work for one of the big three accounting firms and them trying to do the same thing. They may well be doing that. No idea. Not my business, don't care. What I'm talking about is like how well is a college grad fit for a startup and how well fit is a startup for a college grad? Right. And again, this isn't justification, but I think it is worth talking about for just a minute. In most cases, a startup isn't a great place for a new college grad, right? One of the things we don't find at most startups is a very defined career path, which is something that most college grads want. We don't find competitive wages or benefits in a lot of cases, right?
Right.
Early stage startups, you're not going to find like management, right? You might be the only person in your role, in a role you've never done before and have never worked in or ill prepared for. And then you're looking for mentorship, right? You're looking for guidance. And it doesn't exist. And I think this is why when we go back to your third category there, the young and hungry, they fit so much better because they've gone out. They've already got shots on goal. They know what the work looks like. They have demonstrable evidence that they can complete it, saying that I can feel very comfortable bringing them into a role that I know isn't going to have a lot of handholding and mentoring and guidance. Right.
Right.
Conversely, you bring in a college grad and a lot of times they will absolutely suffer or stymie their growth. Again, not trying to justify it, but I think it is fair to go into these things eyes wide open in terms of what all of the outcomes of just taking this job away from somebody. That's not what we're talking about, right?
Well, and remember, like we're saying taking the job and everybody kind of runs the rescue of US college grads. Remember, they're number four, which means there are two people in front of them that are also losing to the other competition, right? If you were a person on Fiverr, right? 2 years ago.
Who wrote descriptions for products on Shopify, right?
Exactly. Like that was getting, you know, categories request after request for essentially these menial repetitive tasks. That just went away. Like your entry level into that level of task just went away, right? So everyone thinks about it in terms of there's like US college grads, and when I say everyone in the US, US college grads, and then against everyone else. It's like, that's not the way it's working, right?
Yeah.
And again, this is about our focus here is about this new pecking order for what is entry level. Now, here's what's interesting about entry level changing and morphing. As more and more of these, quote, entry level jobs, and we're using the euphemism entry level, but what we really mean is shit work, really like grunt work that like a lot of people don't want to do.
Yep.
The kind of stuff an intern got handed, like the go get the coffee and make copies kind of thing. That stuff is moving off the table. Now, what's interesting when that stuff moves off the table, Ryan, how many people over the course of the last 100 years got entry-level jobs for no other qualification than they were cheap and they would show up?
Yeah.
Right? Because they didn't know squat.
Right.
That's the other thing that I think people need to start understanding. The bar for what each of these tiers of folks needs to be able to do to retain its entry-level status is going up geometrically.
Yeah.
And it's happening very quickly.
It is. And look, I think that if nothing else, like think of it from a US college grad perspective or maybe somebody who's in college right now. If you're in college right now, one of the things you should be thinking about is if you're following along and you're hearing the ranks here, if I'm a college grad who is AI capable, has done some side hustle, so that's tier one and tier three, and is globally competitive in some sense. And this doesn't mean you need to be the cheapest resource out there, right? Like very rarely when I'm on Upwork or I'm looking at global talent, I'm not just like, okay, what's the cheapest way I can get this done? I'm looking for the most effective way to spend my money, right?
Yeah.
That's it. So if you can show me that you have the right kind of experience and that you check some of these other boxes, all of a sudden, you know, you can move up in these ranks. But again, like maybe that's not entry level. We're talking like entry level first job and entry level work, right? So looking at that from both sides, like this isn't just your first job. This may not be the first job we're doing in a startup, but maybe we've just launched a sales function for the first time ever. And we need some sales support. We need to craft messaging. We need to be doing outreach. We need to be doing all this stuff. Well, the first choice is going to be an inexperienced salesperson who's never done that before. It's going to be, can we automate some of this messaging using best practice, right? Can we have somebody who's a globally competitive talent who really understands this work monitor that on a very, very fractional basis.
Yep.
Then maybe we do roll in somebody with some side hustle, right? Maybe you don't have a college degree, but you did door-to-door sales selling Kirby's or something that just shows, right, that you've got the muscle that it takes to go out there and hear no 1,000 times to get to a yes. This is the pathway to changing some of these dynamics.
Another version of this was always the internship. The internship was this quasi-apprenticeship. Again, it was really just a reason to people to give people grunt work for little to no pay, right? And no one was saying, I have an internship that I want to pay a ton of money for and give high-level work to. Right. I mean, so clearly, like, that was the intent. And so, again, the qualification of being a good intern was maybe you were going to a good school that whoever was hiring you appreciated, you know, the school, maybe, and that you were just willing to show up. What is your resume for being an intern? Right. The idea was nothing, but the work that you were going to get handed, you're not going to get anymore. Right. Like, so that's step one. Now, I want to zoom out because, again, I want to make this a bit less about woe is all of these folks for not getting their entry level work.
Yeah.
And more focused on what we talk about, which is how does this help founders?
Immensely, the short answer.
Right? Yeah. So the reason we opened up the episode talking about U.S. college grads and the fact that that used to be our hunting ground for all of our talent is because we needed people that were young so they could take risk, that were inexpensive because we didn't have any money, right?
Yeah.
And were hopefully smart enough that, like, you know, they could get some stuff done. But that was our only option. Now, that also came with some pretty big liabilities. And you touched on a few. I just want to recap those really quickly, right? Number one, it came with cost. I mean, those folks, if they were coming out of the U.S., right, were expensive relative to all the other things we're talking about. So even if we were paying somebody in the U.S., like a quasi-minimum wage is going to make $15 an hour, and that's just not a lot of money. It is if you're paying it.
Right. It is if you're paying it and you're uncertain of what the ROI on that's going to be. Again, like if we're just testing something, we're doing something for the first time, we have no idea how far down that spend hole we're going to have to go before we see any results, if we see any results.
And this is even more important than the cost. At that price, we're almost certainly only going to be able to afford somebody that didn't know what they were doing. Let's overlook that part.
You're right. Which kind of thumbs the scale on the result in the wrong direction, right?
I mean, like... But we were willing to accept it because we were broke. You take what you can get. So it was like, this developer's never shipped anything, but I can't afford another developer. So, like, you know, I'll hire this person, right? Cool. The third part, though, was it came with an understanding, or at least an implicit understanding, that there would be a long-term relationship here. Like, yes, I'll do this crap work for you because I'm hoping that I'll get a job with you, et cetera. It was always the implication. You clerk at a law firm because you hope to work there. You residency at a hospital because you hope to work at the hospital, so on and so forth, right? Now you have these other options as an employer that don't have those hooks,
right?
That's a massive change in liability that hasn't changed in decades. That's a big deal.
Yeah, it is. Now, I think that's one of the things that we got to look at here is the speed to stability here, right?
Yeah.
The speed to certainty, where it allows us to test so many more things at once. Because when you've only got a very limited amount of money, which is every startup ever, the number of bets you can play simultaneously is so limited at a time where you need to be making lots of bets and trying to 100%. Figure out what's going to work, right?
Yep.
You need to be testing. When that's limited to one or two lanes at a time, your progress is going to be really slow.
Yep.
And as you and I both know, the time to results is life or death for a startup company, right? At some point, when you just run out of money, if you haven't achieved any results, or you just run out of steam or passion, right? Just energy in general. Like, we've been at this for a year, and because the pace of progress is so slow, we just can't do this anymore, right? We told ourselves we're going to give ourselves a year, 18 months to see if this worked. Well, the reality is, it's not a fair test at that point,
right?
If we'd had all the resources that we need and we could test as many things as we wanted to, we probably would have found out very, very different things and may have stabilized a business that could now move forward. So, so many startups die in the vine simply because of this resource starvation at the early stages. And I think that the tiers that we're talking about now and the new avenues that have opened up for hiring, quote unquote, have completely changed that. I think you can make progress so much faster now and prove or disprove, right? Like, getting to product market fit is so much faster now. Early stage idea validation, so much faster now.
Right.
Marketing channel validation, so much faster now.
To your point, now I can build out a team, not one person.
One
for
person.
A very small amount of money. That is a massive sea change for all of startups, right? It is a very big deal. At the corporate America level, like, again, that's what this episode's about. Who cares? I have no idea how it affects them. I'm sure it's somehow better. Maybe, who knows? But it's life or death for startups. If we can say, Ryan, you and I are just getting started, right? And I'm going to use some quick numbers just so we can kind of paint the picture in people's heads. We built a small SaaS business. we've got $10,000 a month in ARR. MRR. Not all the money in the world, but like something's happened.
Some.
Right? We got a little bit of cash, right?
We can afford to pay for some stuff.
Right. Our options in the past, not at present, in the past would have been, we can hire one person, maybe, part-time, for like $3,000 or $4,000 a month. Honestly, it doesn't even matter who they were, because you have a cost of living bias that like you've got to cover, right? And most people would be like, if you're coming from a big city, like, wait, $3,000 or $4,000 a month? Like, that doesn't even pay rent.
That doesn't work.
In my city.
Right.
Most people don't live in your city. Just forgot. And so the second thing, though, is, to your point, we got to place one bet. And by the way, the shittiest bet possible, because the only person we could afford was a fraction of a human that was willing to do that, which reduced our buying pool, so to speak, so incredibly small that what we're really hiring for is who is willing to take the job, right?
Yeah.
Which by definition gives us the shittiest person we can find, right? That's the very nature of the criteria.
Go back to the singular bet thing, right? Because it's such, I'm laughing, but it's not funny, right? It's that you find startups stuck in this position all the time where they're like, all right, look, we can either afford to build product we can't market or market a product we can't afford to build.
There it is. Like, there it is.
That's the crux of this whole thing.
That's where I was headed.
If you can start to do both of those things, then all of a sudden, like you said, it's a sea change, right? All of a sudden, everything is now different because we can start to actually make meaningful progress on things that by nature have to coexist in order to have any leverage or real progress, right? If you build the entire product, you're like, well, we did it. We built the product. Yep. Awesome. How much money do we have left to market? Negative $50,000. Fuck. And this is like every startup ever, right? We all run into this problem at some point where there's resource starvation and it forces us into making, like, I can't even call them decisions, right? It just forces us into gauntlets where the chance of victory is so small. This is what drives startup failure rate, right? When we talk about why startups are hard, this is it. This is the absolute center of that discussion.
I want to keep on our example. Okay, so we've got $10,000 of MRR.
Okay.
But we need four people. We need a developer, we need a marketer, we need someone in customer service, and we need somebody doing some light outbound sales.
Let me send a couple quick emails here. ChatGPT said it's available for all four of those.
Perfect, perfect. And we need managers that replace us. Done. All right. So we need four people. I want to pause on that for a second. We don't get to have four people in current terms.
Nope.
At best,
you do not.
We get to pick the shittiest version of one. Now, how does that other work get done? Obviously, Ryan, you and I figure it out. That's, you know, figure it out. But wait a minute. Hold on. What if some of those other roles don't need a full-time person, or in some cases,
they rarely do.
Right? At $10,000 of MRR, we have a lot of like support tasks that are piling up, but there's not enough work for a full-time person. So hiring a person anywhere really full-time makes no sense to us, right? On top of that, half of those requests that are coming in could actually just be automated scripts going back out, right? We could automate it through AI. It doesn't require a person consistently. It would just require a person there long enough to set up those scripts so they can go work on other stuff. What we can do here is we can start to create a recipe of what can we AI, what can we automate through AI so that we don't have to do it again, so that we don't have to incur that cost, right? A perennial cost. Second, who can we find on a part-time basis that could do this work at a highly competent level? I want to say that $3,000 that we're going to use to hire an engineer who's going to put 5 to 10 hours a week on it could get us a full-time engineer somewhere else, by the way, with experience.
You know, something that's really funny about everything we talk about here is that none of it is new. Everything you're dealing with right now has been done 1,000 times before you, which means the answer already exists. You may just not know it, but that's okay. That's kind of what we're here to do. We talk about this stuff on the show, but we actually solve these problems all day long at groups.startups.com. So if any of this sounds familiar, stop guessing about what to do. Let us just give you the answers to the test and be done with it.
Probably contextual to the project we're doing.
Right.
Right. I think that's the other thing that like the global piece of this opens up so much is that you can find people because the pool just it's exponential at that point. I mean, I know we think of like the US as being this massive market and it's not a small market. Certainly from a numbers standpoint, from a financial numbers standpoint, it's a big market, one of the biggest. But from a people standpoint, it's a whole lot more people outside the borders, right? And when you look at it from that perspective, finding somebody who's done the very thing that you need them to go do as opposed to someone who's never even done anything like the thing you need to do. And they're going to go learn on the job and hopefully figure it out in time. And at that time, we'll sync up with when we do have a marketing budget, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? So the access to that talent and having somebody who can actually do the work that needs to be done is game changing for startups. And it's something that we just haven't had, right? There's very few startup founders who are like, yeah, I remember when I just hired that person who knew exactly what I needed to do and they just built a thing the first time and it was awesome. I've never heard anybody say that.
Let me stick with that because this is some of the inquiry, not so much pushback, but inquiry I got from some sure. other founders when I talked about this over the past couple of weeks. They're like, yeah, but quality. And I said, well, hold on, back up. Okay. Number one, I have hired thousands of people. There is no rubric where all of a sudden it's all quality. It's like, oh, yeah, but if I hire a U.S. college grad, it will always be quality. Bullshit. You've never hired enough U.S. college grads to know that's true. The other kind of misunderstanding we get is, oh, overseas, again, I hate even using this term, overseas talent, this is such a U.S. thing. Overseas talent is those people that are annoying on Dell customer support when I call in and they're from India and they don't speak English and blah, blah, blah. Like, sure. Yes, that exists. It's not what we're talking about, right? Yep. At all. Right.
As if you've never run into bad, apathetic customer service.
Oh, my God.
US,
right. Seriously. You ever been to an airport?
Come on.
So, you know, the first thing I say is, look, you got to understand, right? Like the folks that are the cream rising to the top at a global level, a lot of them that are showing on Upwork with tons of, you know, feedback, et cetera, are legit. They were the hardest working people, by the way, not incidental. We can talk about work ethic separately, but those are the hardest working people to get there. So the level of filtration by the time you're hiring those folks, you're hiring the top 1% of 1% globally, right? You know, as far as, you know, people who have that service available. But the bigger part that I think is important is for the first time, startups don't have to make one decision. Like we were saying, we get to hire a developer, but there is no marketing. This is bananas.
Right.
What if we can have all four people? What if we can pay each person $1,000 a month? And, you know, we'll extract as much as we can versus what they're willing to provide for that value. But we're not betting all of our time for 5 hours of some college kid's time. We're building a team. And to your point, that team, because they're all essentially freelancers to begin with, we'll cycle through a whole bunch of them. If you guys haven't done this for a long time.
And they'll be fine with that. And we'll be fine with that because we don't represent 100% of their take-home pay. Right. And that, I think that's the beauty of it. Is something else I want to stick on for just a second here, which is the parallel nature of that type of work. So when we can hire all four, sure, that seems like just generally speaking better. But let's talk about something really specific that happens there. Well, you and I both know this. We've had multiple failures and we've seen like where they fail. You don't necessarily know where the point of failure is going to be. Right. And so that's why validating these things in parallel, right? If something was going to break, like if we go develop our product first, right? And then we learn to market it. But then we somehow fail at customer support later. If we did that sequentially, we're now a year and a half, 2 years in to an adventure that if we had learned early on that support was going to be our issue, or there was just some fundamental thing that we couldn't solve for, or maybe it was the product that we couldn't build, right? Or maybe that we can't market it at a cost that allows us to actually deliver what we deliver. Knowing that sooner than later is so important. Like when you learn these things sequentially, it's painful. This is where things like technical debt come into play, or pivots come into play, right? Pivots often happen because we started building our product and we built for a long time and then we went to market it. And then we start marketing it. And we realize it doesn't actually fit the market. The cost structure wasn't right. We have to change it up. Like we were delivering service plus SaaS, but nobody can afford to pay for service plus SaaS. We got to turn it into all SaaS. Right. Would have been good to know that when we were building the product before we started marketing, right? So there's so much benefit that comes out of this parallelism as opposed to having to do things in sequence where we get learnings that should feed into each other when they're being done in parallel that just can't happen sequentially.
You bet. And so from a startup standpoint, from a founder standpoint, it's impossible to ignore this. We're looking at all of these new categories.
Never underestimate one's ability to bury their head in the sand, but
Or just not know. To be fair, like Ryan, you and I are on the cutting edge of this stuff. Like it's our job because we work with startups to understand exactly what's working, exactly what's new, et cetera. And there's pros and cons to all of it. You know, we said this before, like AI in its current state, this is 2024 when we're recording this, in its current state, is basically a really smart college grad that you hired that you constantly have to manage in order to get the answer that you ever want.
Yep.
You know that the potential's there, but it ain't free, right? It requires a ton of overhead to get that answer, right? And there's some costs associated with that. The difference is once you get it right, you can hit repeat 1,000 times at zero cost. The second part, you know, when we're talking about the global level of talent, we got to remember, like, we're talking about really talented people. We're not talking about, like, interns, right? We're talking about people with five or 10 years experience that are full time at half the cost, or in some cases way less, of their U.S. counterparts.
By the way, with validated outcomes, right? Because I think one of the challenges that you run into when you're not hiring on a platform like that, you're sort of taking their word for it. There's very little objective feedback. You know what people's resumes never have? Star ratings of the jobs that they did previously.
Right? Or any mistakes.
It's like, it's binary. I did it or I didn't. And sometimes even that's not necessarily true. Whereas you go to a platform like that, there's a ton of social proof and validation that this person can do the job, right? You get to understand a lot more about them than you otherwise would through an interview process or anything else. Yeah, you can ask for referrals, but I mean, like that's not thumbed, right? Like, sure, I'll let you talk to the three people who love me the most in the entire world. Right. Of course I will.
And the other thing too is when we look at these different roles, again, you know, I'm talking about the number two rank here being global talent.
Yep.
We look at a role like a social media manager and we say, oh, that's an $80,000 job, okay? Which means we're just somehow arbitrarily saying that that's an $80,000 cost center because people that happen to be in the market, again, in the US, that's what they can command.
Do you have $80,000 worth of need?
That's what I'm saying.
Right? Do you have $80,000 worth of ROI? Probably not as an early stage startup. Probably not, which means that like if we're doing the calculus, we just have to say no to that role. And I think that's part of the challenge that it, how often have you seen this? Well, just a curiosity question here, but how often have you seen people not decide to enter into something simply because at that point in time, the cost structure didn't work, even if that would have been a great idea or something you do need to build. But when you look at it, you just go objectively, mathematically, I can't do this right now. It's the wrong reason to say no to that.
Correct. And what you'd also be saying is, look, I'm paying $80,000 not because I have $80,000 worth of value in that particular role. I'm paying it because that's the least I can pay people in this world to show up and do any job. One of the places where that gets gnarly is if we can't pay more, if that role isn't worth more to us, then we really have no way to invest more in this person, which means their only thought is, how do I get out of here?
How do I get out of here? Or how do I get rid of them, right? Because the other side of that is if you do hire somebody entry level and you pay the penalties for that and you work through that and you validate that, okay, social media is a great channel for us. You probably just leapfrogged their capabilities and now you need somebody that's not them anyways.
Correct.
So do you hire somebody that sits over them and triple your cost, or do you let them go and hire a replacement who has better skills? One of the beauties of, again, we'll go back to just the fractional talent here, whether you're starting with some AI, or you're starting with global talent on a fractional basis. If you're hired somebody who is experienced, but you're paying the equivalent of an entry-level college salary, not necessarily because you're paying them less per hour, you're just paying them four less hours. You now have a built-in ability to scale that role with the same human because they were only putting in 10 hours a week.
Right.
Now you can double it to 20 or maybe just 50% increase to 15 as needed. It changes so much for startup companies when we don't have to hire in full human chunks, right? It's so much better for us.
Which brings us to the third category being the young and hungry. Really what we're talking about is people who have experience. They're young, and for their age, they're 20 years old, they have a lot of experience. They've got like four solid years of work experience. They're not some newbie just showing up for the first time saying, teach me how to work. In the past, it was hard to cultivate that person because the world didn't exist in a way that person could get those kinds of opportunities that early.
Yep.
The tools didn't exist, right? Like now you can be 16 years old and have a million followers on Instagram. That is a real thing. That didn't exist before. Like that wasn't a thing.
Nope.
I mean, that'd be like having your own TV show, right? Like it just didn't exist, but now you can do that. Now you can set up a Shopify store, right? And actually make a ton of money. You know, there's so many things you can do now.
Go educate yourself on YouTube in the first place.
Oh my God.
Right? To understand how to do this stuff, right? Like the knowledge gatekeeping where it's not real, but we used to pretend that like you went to university to get the skills you needed to do a good job. Really wasn't what it's about, right?
Right.
Like how many people came out of college, like I have a marketing degree, I'm ready to market. No, you're not, right? You're still coffee and copies for now, but we'll get you there.
Right, right.
Unlike now where, you know, you want to learn how to do B2B marketing through social media, you can go and give yourself a masterclass in that with 30 or 40 hours on YouTube and then go start practicing it tomorrow by just doing the work.
Right, absolutely.
And all of a sudden now, like you're a candidate, right? Now you are somebody, you're young, hungry, experienced. You've proven that you've got the desire to take on the skills and you've shown through demonstrable evidence that you actually can use them, right? Here's some outcomes. Here's some stuff I did. I created this.
our CTO, Steve, had two companies under his belt by the time he joined us, right? And again, he wasn't even 22 years old yet. You and I both did, right? You know, if we look at our own careers, right? And we had to earn it very differently just because the tools weren't available at the time. But
literally,
the point is, if you're 22 years old right now and you haven't had at least two or three jobs, like jobs being be projects, side hustles, whatever, like resume line items. And I'm not talking about the drive-through at DQ. I'm talking about like actual—
Or
like,
your volunteering experience. Nothing against volunteering, by the way, but like, does it qualify you for a job to work under me in marketing at a startup company? No, it does not.
Right.
No, it does not. Right. I'm glad that you went to the soup kitchen. That's awesome. It's great. You help people. Wonderful. You're a good human.
But that's a whole other like a component, right? But like, if you got a degree right now in communications and you're like, I want to become a social media manager, right? Cool. What campaigns have you run? Where have you been successful? Yeah. Right. Well, I haven't. I learned about it in college. Why would I hire you over somebody that already has that experience that's the same age?
Yeah.
Again, the sea change being that wasn't— you weren't competing with that before. If you were a 22-year-old coming out of college with a degree, you weren't competing with people your age that had already shipped, that had already like delivered. And now you are at a scale never seen before. That's a big deal.
Yeah, there's probably an entire another conversation around this, but just the fact, like, I think I gotta be real careful here, but the entitlement, right? The fact that, you know, if we go back, not very far back, right? Like maybe our parents' generation was the first one where really at scale, people were able to obtain that college education. That was something that their parents really had to work for to make that happen. And they did. And they were proud of that. And they were proud of the outcomes it achieved for their children. And then that kind of became table stakes where just like everybody had to go.
Right.
And so I think part of this and part of the pushback that we see against this discussion, part of the, you know, the vitriol that you faced over social last week comes from that place, right? It comes from, we had to work so hard to earn the right and earn the capability to put people through this program that should then entitle them to something on the other side. And I think that I get it, but it's a really dangerous way of looking at that, right?
Like,
who is entitled to the job? Somebody who did something that's unrelated, admirable, but unrelated to what I need? Or the 21-year-old kid who spent a couple weeks on YouTube and then a year doing the work? I think we have to be really careful here because it sets us up. I mean, like if you want to be like and you saw some of that, we saw some pro America stuff in the feedback. And I was like, you should hire American first. Sure. Okay. But like on the basis of pure entitlement, simply because they're American and because they completed a degree, can't do that. At a startup level, we can't do that. We'll hire that person and fire them a month later when we got a business, right? Doesn't work that way. So I think we have to be really careful about rewarding the right things here and making sure that this isn't about entitlement and it isn't about the sacrifices that were made to unlock this wonderful thing that is a college education if it's not fit for purpose where we're talking about early stage and entry level startup hiring.
Yeah, I mean, look, to be fair, these things go through an evolution. There was a time when getting your GED was what you needed to get into the workforce, right? That was the whole point of it, right? It was graduate high school. That's how you make it in the world, right?
Yep.
That was also 1948, right? Like a couple of things have changed since then. A little bit of industrialization happened, right? And it became all of a sudden college got you from the factory into the office, right? And that was your rite of passage. And it worked for a very long time, like 50 years, right? But it changed. Like that's all we're saying, right? And so if you're like, oh, college degree is still the most important thing. Yeah. Again, remember, so was a high school diploma at one point, and then everybody had one.
Yep.
And then that wasn't enough anymore. And then college degree became, you know, the threshold. Yep. And that's kind of gone by the wayside. It's not gone everywhere. If you want to become a doctor, lawyer, you're going to need your degree, right? And this isn't us knocking degrees. Get whatever the hell you want, right?
Yeah.
I don't care.
Be realistic about who you're going to go to work for afterwards.
Yeah, just be mindful that like it isn't the hall pass that it used to be. And that's okay. And not only is it not the hall pass, but you're competing now, right? If you're coming out of college right now, and this is also to parents thinking about how they're prepping their kids coming out of college, right? You are competing with stuff that just didn't exist before. 5 years ago, you weren't competing with AI. 10 years ago, you weren't competing with what I would argue is the level of global talent. Because in to the credit of the rest of the world, right? You know how we say it in the US, to the credit of the rest of the world, people leveled up. People around the world got smart. And the folks that are coming to us now, that maybe 10 years ago, it'd be like there's so much overhead with maybe a language barrier or an experience barrier or something like that. The folks that we're talking to now, there is no language barrier. And by the way, we're all remote, which changed everything. We're all remote anyway because we're on Slack all day anyway. So I can't tell the difference if you're in Lithuania or Ohio.
Right.
I don't know the difference, right? But the other part is, to their credit, they're really good now. Like really, really good.
Yep.
to the point where in many cases, it's harder to find a U.S. equivalent of their skill set. Take price off the table. We're just talking like pound for pound talent now. That's a big deal.
It is. Yeah, I think that one of the, I was going to comment on something there. You brought it up earlier, you brought it up now again, which is there, some of these, the foreign talent was hard to work with. Language barriers, or it was low quality work or whatever. In 90% of the cases that I dug into, and I was guilty of it myself, as a startup company, you often don't know what you're asking for.
Yep.
You know who wasn't complaining about that foreign talent? Large corporations who outsourced to them, right? Why? Because they were good at documenting what was needed. They were good at managing projects. They were good at managing people in general, right? When a startup company goes out and they're like, well, we kind of need this, right? A much easier way of doing that, not an efficient or effective way of doing it, but much easier way of doing that is having somebody sitting next to you in an office where you can be like, oh, yeah, not there, there, right? No, don't, but move this there. Oh, wait. Oh, if that won't work. Oh, hey, what's this question? What's that? And there's just this kind of like progress through osmosis. Whereas with a lot of those, like especially where language barriers were concerned or management was concerned, you had to have really clear requirements. You know what I rarely saw when I was like, people would come to me and they're like, this is failing. Like we're upside down in this. We're on our third, you know, iteration of this product. It's still not working. I was like, let me see the requirements. Let me see what you told them to build. I was like,
right, how prep
in 90% of the cases, they built exactly what was asked. They did what you said, not what you meant. And that's a huge problem.
I want to give you a parallel because I can never like get this out of my head. In the mid-2000s, you know, I moved out to Los Angeles from Ohio. And at the time, I had a team in Ohio that were running, you know, a lot of the companies, some of them that we have now. When I would meet with founders, LA and San Francisco, and I would talk about like our cost structure of things that we can get built. And I love this example because you can take the nationality off of it. People were like, how the hell can you get a developer in Ohio? I mean, I'm not even kidding. Not one or two of them said that. Like 90% of the people I talked to said this, okay? And I was like, wait, you do know that people like get educations and understand math and can like write code.
Do the calluses on their fingers from shucking corn impact their ability to write code?
Right. Yeah. And I heard this from VCs, from founders, like not from a couple of people. Now, the funniest ones by far were the people like, oh, you're from Ohio. And I'm like, motherfucker, you're from Michigan. You moved there like eight months ago. What are you talking about, right? Which is most of California. Anyway, what was interesting was they had it in their head that the only way you were going to find competent, the right level of talent, as they described it, was to find them on the West Coast, right? Or in the
people who had also recently moved there and swelled their rates by 3x for no other reason than that's where they
were
geographically.
I'm like, oh my God, are you kidding me right now? Yeah. Like, dude, every person in this room isn't from California.
Right.
Like, how did you lose that sense of that one? But there was
I'm Californian by salary only.
Yeah, exactly. You know, right. Like, the joke I always make, it was like a bunch of people in the room that talk about the city they lived in as if they invented it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you don't get to take credit for being here. Anyway, my point is the folks, even in the U.S., right, at the time, couldn't believe that there was somewhere else that wasn't where they chose to base that could possibly be as competent as them. And they had this whole stigma in their minds that like if you were hiring people that weren't from the Bay Area, et cetera, they must not be that good. And that's why they're not there.
Oh, some of that was just pure ego, man. Some of that was just pure ego to say that, like, because if that is true, I'm an idiot for paying what I'm paying to get this work done. Right. So like I can't possibly accept that. So it couldn't be that. So it must be that cool that you're going to do this with an inferior staff and take longer to build an inferior product. Cool. That's not how we're going to do it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the other part. Okay. And we touched on this a moment ago, but I just want to come back to it for a second. The other part was, hey, you know what I'm not doing with my folks in Ohio? I'm not watching them switch jobs every 6 months. Right?
You're right.
I'm not having them complain to me that they only have $5,000 a month to pay rent, right? You know, et cetera. I'm like, they're going to drive a BMW, live in a beautiful house and have an incredible family for less than your lowest paid employee. The quality of life for my team is going to be 100 times better. And we're still in the United States, right? Again,
and we're still in the U.S. Yeah.
It's like we're still in the highest cost structure in the world. And folks didn't see it. And I'm using that again as a proxy to say now when I talk to CEOs and I explain to them like, hey, there's a social media manager in Serbia that is badass, probably better than anybody you have on your staff, has a better work ethic. And to them, increasing their salary, their comp by $1,000 in a month is like 2xing it. Like they get two more BMWs that month, right? Like the quality of life that you can provide is extraordinary. and they actually don't believe it. Almost like it's too good to be true. What's the catch?
Yeah, right? can't possibly. Yeah, what's the catch? And then there's all the justifications, right? Like, well, but you're taking jobs away from these people, or you're putting money outside the country, whatever. Like, okay, sure.
Here's, you got to consider. Yes, that is true. You're absolutely taking money. You're taking it from, by the way, where you couldn't afford it to begin with, because the idea is that you could have just afforded it either way. If I could afford to pay somebody $10,000, maybe I'd be paying them $10,000, right? I don't have $10,000.
That's
it. Right? That's the part they're like, oh, you're taking jobs. No, those jobs weren't available. I literally, that's the whole point. Yeah. A startup, I couldn't hire that person to begin with. Right?
I went to that store and they told me to leave and come back when I had real money, right? Like,
that's the equivalent of saying, hey, when you drive onto the Honda lot, you're taking sales away from Ferrari. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because you were just as soon going to buy a Ferrari, but you just randomly decided to buy a Honda?
It was a coin toss. It came up tails. Here I am at Honda.
That's the dumbest argument ever. What I think is fascinating with all of this is, for us, Ryan, you and I as founders and all the folks that listen, world's changed, folks. World has changed. World has changed significantly. In good news. It's good news for everybody, including the U.S. college grads, et cetera, because they're going to find even better jobs to compete for. But it's great news for us as founders, because now all of the things historically, and that's really what this is about, all of the things that historically that might have prevented us from making hires or making bets, et cetera, now are way more affordable by orders of magnitude than they ever have been before, which means more and more and more folks, including some of those U.S. college grads, a lot of them, can now start startups at a fraction of the cost, get exponential returns, and build bigger companies that, guess what? Hire more people.
Overthinking your startup because you're going it alone? You don't have to, and honestly, you shouldn't, because instead, you can learn directly from peers who've been in your shoes. Connect with bootstrapped founders and the advisors helping them win in the Startups.com community. Check out the Startups.com community at www.startups.com to see if it's for you. Could be just the thing you need. I hope to see you inside.